Good morning, everyone. My name is Ben Passer. I'm Director of Energy Access and Equity at Fresh Energy. And I'm really excited to be here with all of you this morning. Thanks so much for being here. And I'm really looking forward to an excellent conversation throughout the day. And what I'd like to do in our time together is really just address this question that I've been hearing a lot in my work, at least recently, which is, do we really need a Green New Deal? So before we dive into that question, I just want to share a little bit more about Fresh Energy in case you haven't heard of us. We're an independent energy policy nonprofit organization in St. Paul, Minnesota. We've been around for about 27 years. We have a staff of around 25 people. And this slide really just describes the philosophy of how we carry out our work. We're really working to speed the transition to a clean energy economy. We focus on policy, but we also increasingly are working with other advocates working in the community and really just trying to emphasize visionary, realistic energy policy across Minnesota's energy sector. A little bit more about our programs. We have eight main programs at Fresh Energy. The first is Clean Power, all about renewable energy such as wind and solar. We also have Energy Efficiency, which is working to reduce energy usage in our buildings. Global Warming Solutions, which is working to remove fossil fuels from our energy sector. Energy Access and Equity, which, as I mentioned, is the program that I lead. I think I hit a button there, Brody. I'm sorry. Perfect. Better Buildings, which is really just working to improve energy performance in buildings through things like strong energy codes. Electric Cars and Buses, which is rather straightforward. The Center for Pollinators and Energy, which is working to promote pollinator habitats, sustainable farming, and similar practices around renewable energy. And then the Energy News Network, which is Fresh Energy's independent journalistic arm, which is entirely web-driven. You might have heard of Midwest Energy News. That's a publication that is housed at Fresh Energy, but is separate from our policy work. So just by a quick show of hands, how many folks here today have heard of this big idea known as the Green New Deal? All right, great. So just about everyone. That's fantastic. So the specifics, of course, are still in the works, but really the Green New Deal in a nutshell aims for a 100% clean energy standard, healthcare, jobs, and so on. The Sierra Club described it as a big, bold transformation of the economy to tackle the twin crises of inequality and climate change. And the Sunrise Movement describes it as a 100% clean energy standard by the year 2030, investment in communities on the front lines of poverty and pollution, and the guarantee of a quality job. Now, the Green New Deal started at the federal level, but has since seen multiple state-based iterations, including right here in Minnesota, which I believe we'll be hearing about later today. So this sounds like a pretty big deal, right? No pun intended. But I do want to jump back to this question that I opened with, which is, does Minnesota really need a Green New Deal to start making the ambitious change that we need right now? And this might surprise you, but I'm actually going to say no. I know some of you might be raising your eyebrows at that, but just hear me out. Those of you who support the idea of a Green New Deal might be thinking, wow, this guy doesn't like a policy that would invest in clean energy, marginalized communities, and good-paying American jobs. What does he possibly know? Well, let's talk about it. What do I know? Or maybe the better question actually is, what do we know? Well, we know that all five of the hottest years on record have occurred within the last 5 years, and the 10 warmest years on record globally have occurred within the last two decades or so. This image is from Climate Central, which compiled data from NOAA and NASA, the two federal agencies that are tasked with collecting this information annually. We also know that human activities are already contributing to climate change, and that climate change is already hurting our most vulnerable communities and populations. Some of you might be familiar with the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report that was issued last year, which found that human activities are already contributing to climate change, and those climate-related risks impact health, food security, drinkable water supply, and economic growth. The executive director of the International Energy Agency also said that energy production and use are the most important source of air pollution coming from human activity. And a separate federal report last year found that climate change is already hurting U.S. communities, such as increased destruction from wildfires, increased severity of flooding, and increased magnitude of hurricanes, just to name a few. So we know that human activities, including and perhaps most importantly, energy production and use, including power plants, transportation, and others, are causing climate change, and that's already affecting our communities. We know that these negative health impacts are being seen most among lower-income communities and communities of color, right here in Minnesota, who disproportionately bear the burden of air pollution. These diagrams are from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And in a nutshell, they show that communities of color and under-resourced communities face increased risk of exposure to air pollution. And this diagram on the left shows that particularly, compared to more affluent communities and white households, those risks are even more starkly in comparison. We know that these areas are also seen statewide, from the Twin Cities metro area to the sovereign First Nation lands in Minnesota. And as the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency said, areas of concern for environmental justice are found all across the state. This isn't an urban issue or a rural issue. It's an issue that we all face. We know that under-resourced households spend a greater proportion of their household income toward energy costs compared to the average household. This is a map that shows energy burden among lower-income or under-resourced households nationwide. Now, in my line of work, we often use this phrase, energy burden, which really just means energy costs as a proportion of household income. Taking Minneapolis as an example, under-resourced households spend up to 3 times more of their income toward energy compared to the average household. So, just as an example, the average household spends about 2 to 3% of their household income on energy costs. Under-resourced or lower-income households in Minneapolis can face an energy burden of upwards of 7 or 8%. Also factor in the fact that 67% of under-resourced renters in Minnesota spend over 30% of their income just on rent and utilities every month. We also know that statewide, that energy burden can be even higher. Of course, as household income shrinks, energy burden only grows. And Minnesota's most under-resourced households face energy burdens of upwards of 30%. That means that Minnesota's lowest income households are spending over 30% of their income just on energy costs before factoring in other essentials like housing, food, healthcare, whatever else it might be. We also know that energy burden tends to be higher for renters compared to homeowners. And this is a very detailed table from the Energy Efficiency for All Project and the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy. But what I want to zoom in on is this comparison of energy burden between homeowners, and renters, which shows that on average in the 48 metro areas that this study compared, homeowners have an average energy burden of about 3.3% compared to an energy burden for renters of 4%. Now, that discrepancy might not seem that significant, but when you take into the fact that homeowners own their property and thus have the ability to make energy efficiency investments in their homes and are able to make decisions about their energy usage more directly, that difference is striking. Renters aren't able to invest in energy efficiency as easily. They're not able to make direct investments in their units and thus have less ability to directly tackle this energy burden difference that we see. We also know that solar is booming, but under-resourced households disproportionately face barriers to go solar. So this diagram is actually from the state of California, which shows the rate of adoption by income levels over time. But it actually tracks pretty similarly nationwide. And what I want to point out is that yellow line is California's lowest income households, and it stays relatively flat compared to other income levels in terms of the amount of solar projects that were installed among those among folks of that income level. Lower income Minnesotans face significant barriers such as lack of upfront capital to pay for the cost of solar, lack of access to financing. In the case of rooftop solar projects, an insufficient roof or lack of home ownership, so inability to construct a solar project on their roof. These are all significant barriers that are disproportionately faced by under-resourced households in our state. And we also know that clean energy and the clean energy economy is an increasingly major employer in Minnesota, with over 67,000 jobs in the clean energy sector in our state as of last year. But these jobs often require specialized training or education, which is often more difficult for under-resourced households and communities of color to access. So why am I saying all this? Because in a nutshell, we know a lot. So I know what you're probably thinking at this point. Ben, you've been talking about everything the Green New Deal is about. Clean energy, addressing inequities, jobs. How can you possibly say we don't need a Green New Deal? Well, you might have guessed by now that there's more to that opening question than I originally let on. Because I would argue that it's actually crystal clear that we do need a Green New Deal to respond to the scale and urgency of the problems that face us without further action, from climate change to growing income inequality to racial and social justice issues. Young people in our state and across the country are calling for it because their future is on the line, a future that we hope will continue for generations to come. But until such a policy exists, and I would argue even once it passes, I believe it's incumbent on all of us to at least reflect its values. So the full version of that question I shared earlier should actually say, do we really need a Green New Deal to create ambitious and equitable energy and climate policy today? And the answer I would give to that question is absolutely not. We can and we must do that at all levels, from city policies to regional planning to state law. And here's what's great. We absolutely can start today to make sure that everyone benefits. Right here in Minnesota, there's an incredible movement toward inclusive, equitable energy policy that benefits all. You might have heard about it. It's called the 100% Minnesota campaign. And you might have actually heard that campaign rallying in the Capitol Rotunda earlier this week on Monday night. In fact, just this morning, I saw an article from Grist that said that 1 in 5 people in the U.S. now live in a state that's committed to 100% clean energy. That's incredible. That movement is already happening before the Green New Deal is a reality. We can work to make sure that everyone has the opportunity to purchase an affordable electric vehicle and push toward a public transportation system that doesn't worsen air pollution in our communities. Fresh Energy is proud to be part of a coalition, including environmental justice advocates and community groups, that successfully advocated for Metro Transit to develop a plan to electrify its bus fleet. In fact, in just about a month, the C Line will start here in Minneapolis and will feature Metro Transit's first ever electric buses, with more to be phased in across Metro Transit's fleet over the next couple of years. It's also important to make sure that everyone has access to purchase an electric vehicle, not just those who can afford to be early adopters. Part of this effort involves exploring public-private partnerships, such as the upcoming partnership between Xcel Energy, Our Car, and the City of St. Paul, which will include an electric vehicle ride-sharing program and public vehicle charging stations around the city. We can also work to make sure that utility energy efficiency programs are reaching people in rental housing and that they adequately and sufficiently serve under-resourced communities and communities of color. Earlier this year, the City of Minneapolis passed 2 energy disclosure policies that apply to potential home buyers and renters, requiring that those folks have more access to energy usage information about the home or unit that they're about to sign a purchase agreement or lease for. This is significant for both potential home buyers and renters, but is especially important for renters who historically have not had that level of decision-making power. Now in the City of Minneapolis, renters are able to better understand the true costs of renting a unit before they sign a lease. The intent behind these policies is to drive more investment in energy efficiency and ensure that both houses and rental units throughout the City of Minneapolis are energy efficient and lowering costs for those folks living in them. Energy efficiency helps customers use less energy, which has numerous benefits. Less energy used means less energy that you're charged for, which means lower energy bills. Energy efficiency upgrades also ensure that your heating units, for example, are more efficient, which means you're less inclined to use more improvised methods, such as heating a unit with a natural gas stove. Also, on a more global scale, energy efficiency means less demand on the grid, which means lower air pollution from sources such as coal-fired power plants. Now, going forward with respect to these policies, I do want to touch base on one specific concern that was raised as these policies move forward. Energy efficiency investments aren't, in most cases, completely free. And it's important to ensure going forward that, especially in the case of rental units, any costs associated with energy efficiency improvements aren't somehow passed on to renters, to under-resourced households that are most sensitive to those costs. And that will be something to ensure that these policies are truly equitable going forward. We can work to make sure that solar energy is accessible for everyone, not just the few individuals and larger businesses that can afford the significant upfront costs or have the ability to leverage incentives like rebates and tax credits. Now, I have to give a nod to one of today's featured speakers, Timothy Denherter-Thomas, and the whole Just Solar Coalition that put in so much time and effort to make their community solar garden happen. They're doing great work bringing solar into the community, such as the community solar garden project on the roof of the Shiloh Temple, which is pictured here. Now, this isn't my project to speak to, and it's completely the work of the Just Solar Coalition and organizations like Timothy's. But I just want to call this out as an incredible example of the projects that we're hoping to promote through good policy. We want Minnesota's community solar garden program to help projects like this along, not prohibit them. In addition, we want to make sure that under-resourced households throughout our state are able to access rooftop solar projects if they have the ability. That's why we were proud to help secure Xcel Energy's first ever income-eligible solar incentives within its Solar Awards Rooftop Solar Incentive Program. That helps bring down the upfront cost of solar for those customers and provides bill credits on an ongoing basis. We can also work to make sure that we're taking all of the incredible amount of information that we have and actually using it, putting it into action to address disparities within our communities. This is a map from St. Paul's draft climate action plan, which was released last month. Remember all of that energy burden stuff that I was talking about earlier? Well, this is an illustration of the actual energy burden throughout the city of St. Paul by census tract. This presents a huge opportunity, not only to specifically identify and target areas that need more energy efficiency programming, but also to actively work with those communities, to start an authentic and lasting conversation around energy. And not just that, but to keep engaging with those communities, to address additional issues they might be facing. And last, but certainly not least, and I can't emphasize this point enough, we can and must make sure that all voices are at the table, that solutions are created and driven by, or at a minimum in partnership with, the communities who will be most affected by climate change. We also have to be mindful that there are so many individuals and organizations who have been working on environmental justice and related issues for years, for decades, and that they need resources in order to lead the work that they've already been doing. This is a section of Fresh Energy's commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion, which we formally launched this year as an extension of our mission. And that section reads, "We cannot and should not do this work alone. We are committed to developing climate and energy solutions by collaborating with impacted communities and populations, supporting civic leadership, engaging authentically, and importantly, building partnerships rather than pursuing transactional or extractive interactions." This is significant. It took a lot for our organization to finalize and commit to this statement, but it's important. And it's fundamental to how we carry out our work going forward. Too often throughout history, during times of massive and transformational change, marginalized communities have been left out and left behind. That's why it's important to make sure that everyone is at the table and part of the process in order to develop solutions that these times require of us. Now, throughout my remarks today, we've covered a variety of themes: shared power, collective input, economic development and job creation, aggressive climate change mitigation strategies, and equitable and inclusive benefits. Now, of course, all of these things are pillars of a Green New Deal. The Green New Deal is a much-needed policy vehicle that we unquestionably should be striving toward. But I would argue that all of these things are also critical metrics for us to judge the success of our current policies, what we're currently working toward. Developing ambitious climate and energy policy that's inclusive and equitable is absolutely something that we can do today. Thank you.